Hi, I'm Anna Wolska with the Lupus Foundation of America, which is the founder and owner of the global peer-reviewed open access journal, Lupus Science and Medicine, that is published by BMJ. On today's episode, we will be discussing the paper entitled Remission of Lupus Nephritis, the Trajectory of Histological Response in Successfully Treated Patients, which was recently published in Lupus Science and Medicine Journal. We are joined by the authors of this article, Dr. Anna Malvar, nephrologist at the Fernandez Hospital and Clinical Research Organization in Buenos Aires, Argentina, and professor of medicine, the director of the Division of Nephrology at the Ohio State University Wexner Medical Center in Columbus, Ohio. Dr. Malvar and Professor Rovin, welcome. Let's begin. Could you please tell us the main signs and symptoms of lupus nephritis and life expectancy if left untreated?
All right, I'll start us off, Anna. Thanks very much for having us on the program. The signs and symptoms of lupus nephritis can actually be very subtle, and a lot of patients with lupus might not even notice anything regarding their kidneys until their physician happens to look at their urine and find blood in the urine or protein. Now, sometimes the amount of protein in the urine is quite large, and that causes other symptoms that would alert the patient that something might be wrong, and they would talk to their physician, and that would be checked out. And the most common of these is that they would develop swelling, usually around the feet and ankles. Sometimes if the disease is very severe and it progresses rapidly, they could develop signs and symptoms of kidney failure, but that's rather unusual these days. The life expectancy of patients with lupus who have lupus nephritis is actually quite decreased. And it is one of the most common and major complications of systemic lupus. And if patients progress with lupus nephritis to end-stage kidney disease requiring kidney transplantation or dialysis, that's another significant increase in risk of lower life expectancy. So this is a major problem in this population.
One thing I would like to add is one of the main reasons we started rebiopsying at our unit is that although patients may have these typical clinic symptoms, there's no relationship between the clinical symptoms and the findings you'll see in the histology. So that's why in the origins of this protocol, we thought about rebiopsying so as to know what was going on at the histological level, not only following patients with their clinical symptoms.
So actually, that was my next question. Yeah, could you please describe in more detail the methodology and how patients with lupus nephritis were treated in your study?
Well, this protocol started 20 years ago, after the publication of Dr. Hill, where he showed that patients that were rebiopsy after ending induction therapy didn't show what we were expecting to see in those biopsies, pointing out that the rebiopsy was an excellent tool so as to follow patients. At that moment, we started rebiopsy patients after induction, 6 months after baseline treatment. Then we turn it to a biopsy performed after 12 months of treatment. But the main biopsy is the one we perform after 3 years and a half when we thought about withdrawing immunosuppression. If the patient has, we say, clinical silence, meaning that the patient, the eGFR is stable, a proteinuria is less than 0.5, and patient do not have extrarenal symptoms, the patient is rebiopsy. And only if the patient shows an activity index of 0 in immunosuppression, usually MMF, is stopped. But if the patient shows at least one point of activity, it doesn't matter if it is one or greater than one. For us, one is activity and significant activity. The patient goes on treatment for 2 years more. And then the rebiopsy is repeated. And then again, if the patient does not show an active index of zero, his treatment goes on. So we are looking for the histological response, not only clinical response.
So let me add a little bit to that. Anna is absolutely correct. Anna and I have been working together for many years now. It's been one of these great, you know, collaborative relationships in translational science. And it's really important to point out some background that we have found in our own work and others have found in their work. There is a mismatch between what we see clinically and what we see at the level of the kidney tissue. And that's why this rebiopsy protocol has been put into place. And really, Anna's unit was the first to do this. And now, as we've published more and more, we're doing it, and many other units have adopted this protocol. Now, is it ideal to rebiopsy patients many times in a row? Of course not. That's not what we ultimately want to do. What we ultimately want to do is find biomarkers, urine biomarkers or serum biomarkers, that will reflect what's going on in the kidney. And then we can do this more real time, like continuously monitor these biomarkers and decide how to adapt therapy. But for the time being, we're still using the gold standard of kidney histology. And the protocol is well tolerated, and it really reduces the flare rate of lupus nephritis. And I think that's important for people to understand, because the more flares you have, the more damage accumulates in the kidney, and then you can progress. And we'll see that as we get into the results of this trial. And just one more thing to point out, Anna, in your cohort, this particular cohort that we used, they were treated with basically standard of care therapy, either mycophenolate plus glucocorticoid or cyclophosphamide plus glucocorticoid, correct?
Yes, this started, as I've said, 20 years ago. Other drugs were not approved, are not usually used. Nowadays, what we are trying to do is in those patients that still show activity after their first rebiopsy, meaning 3 years and a half after starting induction, if they show any point of activity, we add something more to the MMF so as to shorten the time or the numbers of rebiopsies. Of course, one thing I want to add is we have a very low number of adverse events during our rebiopsies. Nephrologists perform, me, myself, with my residents, we perform the biopsies with a very well-trained ultrasound guider. And the pathologist, Valeria Alberton, she's great. She's always there so as to tell us if the tissue is going to be enough or not, because that's very important in kidney biopsies. Tissue must have more than 10 glomeruli so as to be useful.
Yeah, and I think that's another really good point that Anna raises, which is the rebiopsy protocol should be done in locations and by folks who are really experienced at doing biopsies so that the safety of the patient is the primary consideration.
Absolutely. So what would you say were the main findings of your study?
Just to sort of put this into perspective, this particular cohort that we analyzed were patients who did extremely well. This is about as good as you can have in terms of response in a lupus cohort. We started out with, this cohort was 110 patients, and only two of those patients over the median follow-up was about 9 years, but obviously on either end of that, shorter and longer. Only two patients progressed to kidney failure requiring renal replacement therapy. And the vast majority of the patients did not even develop a chronic kidney disease defined by a GFR less than 60. So these patients, by and large, did very well. And the very simple question we were asking was, what happens to a kidney in patients who do well with lupus nephritis? And of course, the hope is you start out with pristine kidneys that are normal, and then they get inflamed because of lupus nephritis, and they have immunoglobulin and immune complexes accumulating in the glomeruli and cells infiltrating and causing damage to the kidney parenchyma. And when you get better, we assume that goes away. The two main findings from the study that I think are really critical is that, by and large, inflammation does resolve with our therapies, but it takes a really long time. And the expectation that you start, and generally in these patients were not treated with any of the newly approved medications, you start with high dose therapy and you hope that things go away very quickly. They don't. They take months and months and months and even years. And I think one of the interesting things in the paper is that when you look at the immunoglobulin deposition in the kidney and the complement component deposition, that can take years to go away. The other main finding that I think is really sort of revealing is that chronic damage, which is scarring of the kidney, almost certainly due to the inflammatory processes that's going on, actually starts to occur very quickly. And it accumulates even during the, quote, induction phase or the initial phase of treatment when we're giving patients really intense immunosuppressive therapy. And that's, I think that was a little bit unexpected in the sense that I thought originally that, you know, you get things under control quickly, you prevent damage, chronic damage to the kidney. And that doesn't seem to be the case. And so this has lots of implications for how we think about lupus and the management of lupus. It certainly really supports the idea that the treatment of lupus nephritis is not a short-term investment. It really takes a long time to clean the kidney up, if you will, if we can use that terminology. The other thing that I think is really important is every time the patient flares, chronic damage accumulates. And so you can easily understand that why patients who have multiple flares sort of go on the road to chronic kidney damage that progresses, that eventually results in needing dialysis or transplantation. So it really points to the fact that we have to do everything we can to prevent lupus nephritis flares. Let me turn it over to Anna.
Yes, Brad, everything is perfect. Of course, we think just the same, but a little thing to be added is that when patients were biopsied, their initial biopsy, they already have an activity and a chronicity index, a mean chronicity index of 3 or 4, meaning that when we biopsy patients and we biopsy patients really fast, sometimes we biopsy patients with less than 0.5 grams of proteinuria, and they already have chronic damage. So the thing is that in lupus, if you can biopsy the patient yesterday, it's better than today, because what proteinuria shows is that the kidney is already damaged. So we must do it as fast as we can. And as Brad said, a treatment must be started very energetically. And well, the new way, if we can add the new approved drugs, I think this would be better so as to stop this aggressive inflammation that is present at least for the initial 6 months.
I can't agree more. And I think what we're trying to say is that by the time lupus nephritis comes to clinical attention, a lot of things have happened in the kidney, some of which are irreversible. And that really begs the question, and it is part of our ongoing research efforts, is to understand how we can identify patients with lupus who have developed lupus nephritis much earlier than we traditionally have. This is a key message from the paper. And I think that efforts to start therapy as quickly as possible not only will hopefully prevent the damage accumulating in the kidney, but may actually decrease the length or duration of time needed for these sort of very intense immunosuppressive therapies, because if the disease is caught in an early stage where there's not a lot of inflammation, for example, maybe things can be much more accelerated in terms of achieving the histologic remission that Anna talked about initially. So I think that this really puts into perspective how aggressive lupus nephritis can be. And remember, I keep pointing this out, these are patients who did well. Anna and I are now embarking on a study of her patients, and admittedly, not many of her patients don't do well, but some don't do well. We're doing this sort of study in patients that didn't respond as well to sort of characterize them, and we expect the responses to be exaggerated. So I think these are really important concepts that we have to sort of grapple with. Now, one of the things that Anna just brought up, which is really important, is what would be the effect of the new therapies on the trajectory of these lesions? And I think that's a fair question, and I think it's something we should study in the future. Don't you, Anna?
Yes, of course. I think that things may be changed from the very initial moment, mm-hmm. and that will show they will prove or be illustrated in the future with less scar, that it is the most important thing.
So do you have plans for future research in this topic? And what would you say should be further investigated to progress the research in the lupus nephritis field?
Well, as Brad said, we are now working with patients that did not well. What we see also in patients that do well, that there are a lot of patients that may be active for many years and they achieve less scar than others, where scar appears suddenly and in a huge amount. And other patients start treatment, they seem to respond, and suddenly the storm appears. I think that what we see in the histological level is very simple. Even though Valeria is excellent, she has only 6 classes to put a storm of inflammation into them, where a lot of complements, immunoglobulins, and a lot of things are happening. So I think that the response is not only the histological level, but the molecular level will inform us a lot of what's the real stuff in the kidney.
Yeah.
Don't you think that, Brad?
I do. And just to point out, we and others are dissecting the kidney in various ways. Anna and I and our lab team have been using microdissection to pull out glomeruli in the tubular interstitial space. And we've been studying kidney transcriptomics and proteomics to try and understand these molecular mechanisms that might be at play at the level of the kidney. And I think our precision is getting even better. And now Anna and I and other investigators are going, well, at least we've submitted to look at the kidney using spatial transcriptomics to understand what's getting activated and where. So I think these techniques will really be quite informative and the basis of our ongoing collaboration. The other thing that I think I did want to sort of point out is that not all of the activity index that we sort of measure is a global bit of information that's compiled by our nephropathologist based on several different components. And what we did find in this study, what Anna and I found, was that certain of these actually respond very quickly to standard of care immunosuppression, whereas other ones linger and linger and linger. And so this could help direct us once we understand the molecular mechanisms of a particular inflammatory lesion. This could help us sort of design therapies to maybe target specific types of inflammation in the kidney, and especially ones that are associated with chronic damage. And the paper does detail the association of specific components of the activity index with chronic damage and chronicity. So I believe all of this is, I mean, this is initial work, obviously, but this is all suggesting lots of different things that we can look at to treat lupus nephritis better.
Well, a very important thing, I think, is there are patients that they really achieve an histological response. They didn't have activity index and they didn't have immunoglobulin deposits. So they have only a sclerosis, but they do not have any sign of activity. And those patients that were 20% did not relapse up to today. So that seems to be a protective endpoint. These patients at least didn't relapse, never until now.
All right, thank you for joining us today, Dr. Malvar and Professor Rovin. Would you like to maybe give thanks to anyone?
Well, I would like to thank Valeria. Valeria is our nephropathologist, and she burns her eyes. You know that looking to re-biopsy is not easy. It's not the same as a new flare, and she works a lot, and well, she's really great. And of course, yeah, all the team.
Yeah, I totally agree. Valeria has been working on these projects with us, Valeria Alberton, and she's and her team are excellent nephropathologists, and of course that's what makes this so well done.
Thank you. That was Dr. Malvar and Professor Rovin describing the research on changes in kidney histology over time in patients with lupus nephritis undergoing immunosuppressive treatment. I'm Anna Wolska. Thanks for listening, and please don't forget to tune into the next episode of our podcast.